All right. All right, Leroy, let's hit it. Matthew 14. And Roger, I need you to look up Mark 6. And Jesse, you look up John 6. And find the little headings where Jesus walks on the water. We'll use Matthew as our main one. And the other two to kind of fill in some gaps. Need to put this Jesus walking on the water in perspective. Just before this, and we did not touch on it, but in retrospect I wish we had of, but we might pick it up along the way. Jesus has met and preached, and he's fed 5,000 men with the 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And by feeding 5,000 men, this probably means he fed probably 15,000 people. Because they only counted the men, not women and children. And so he's fed the 5,000. They're very excited about him. They want to make him king. And this is a pivotal point in the ministry of Christ. Because up till now, he had lots of people for him. Lots of people wanted to jump on the bandwagon. And this is kind of the pinnacle. And in a way, it's downhill after this for the rest of Jesus' ministry. And we'll come to that in just a few seconds. Okay, let's pick up with... So remember, he's fed the 5,000. Let's do Mark's first. Have you found it? Okay, just read the whole thing.
And immediately he made his disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side, to Bethesda, while he himself was sending the multitude away. And after bidding them farewell, he departed to the mountain to pray. And when it was evening, the boat was in the middle of the sea, and he was alone on the land. And seeing them straining at the oars, for the wind was against them, at about the 4th watch of night, he came to them walking on the sea, and he intended to pass by them. But when they saw him walking on the sea, they supposed that it was a ghost and cried out, for they all saw him and were frightened. But immediately he spoke with them and said to them, "Take courage, it is I, do not be afraid." And he got into the boat with them, and the wind stopped, and they were greatly astonished. For they had not gained any insight from the incident of the loaves, but their heart was hardened.
Okay, now remember that last sentence there. And of course, any time you read Mark, the word immediately comes in all the time. Immediately, immediately, immediately. John 6.
It says, when evening came, his disciples went down to the lake, where they got into a boat and set off across the lake for Capernaum. By now it was dark, and Jesus had not yet joined them. A strong wind was blowing, and the waters grew rough. When they had rowed three and a half miles, they saw Jesus approaching the boat, walking on the water, and they were terrified. But he said to them, "It is I, don't be afraid." Then they were willing to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat reached the shore where they were heading. The next day, the crowd that had stayed on the opposite shore of the lake realized that only one boat had been there, and that Jesus had not entered it with his disciples, but that they had gone away alone.
Okay. What's missing in these two versions? Don't you think that would have been kind of an important part? Now, we could kind of halfway understand why Mark didn't put it in there. Does anybody know logically why that might be? He's writing Peter's story. So it might have been that Peter kind of said, well, let's just kind of bypass that little part of it. I'm a little foggy on it. I don't know. John, of course, he had the privilege of writing everything about 30 years after Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And for some reason, I guess John didn't think that was very important. So let's go to the well-described incident. Let's go to Matthew. So start with Matthew where Jesus takes off.
Matthew 14,
Well, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side.
Okay, let's stop there. What's an interesting word in that statement?
Immediately.
Immediately, and what else?
He made them.
Made them. Now, that's not a characteristic that we would particularly think of Jesus. Made them. Now, why do you think that Jesus wanted the disciples to go their way and he's going up into the mountain to pray by himself?
He wanted to be alone.
He wanted to be alone, absolutely. What did the crowd want him to, what did the crowd want to do?
Make him king.
Make him king. Now, why do you think the crowd wanted to make him king after he had just fed them?
Yeah.
Had Jesus healed the sick?
Yes.
See, had he raised the dead? Feeding the people? If you're going to overthrow the Roman Empire, what better person could you have as a king? If you're hungry, not a problem. If you're sick, wounded, not a problem. So the crowd is crying out to make him king. And so, how do you think this affected the disciples?
Probably caught up in it.
Yeah.
Well, certainly.
You conniving as to how can we get him to go again?
Yeah, I mean, boy, this is it. This is the time, and we're right here on the ground floor. And so Jesus, this has made them, but Jesus tells the disciples, get in the boat, roll over to this town, I'm going to go up into the mountain, I'm going to spend some time, and then I'll come and join you. Now, you must understand, across this lake is about 4 miles. So the disciples get in their boat, they start rowing, or doing whatever you do in water with a boat. Alright, so they're headed off Jesus' mountain. Why do you think Jesus wants to go to the mountains? Wants to be alone, but what else? Okay, what do you think he was praying about?
I'm sure he was praying that some way these people would understand who he was rather than trying to make some physical king out of him.
Yeah. 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 In the book Desire of Ages, says that he was praying that people would understand that his mission was to come and show them what God was like. And he was praying that their concept of the Satan would be revealed. Because at this point, they were not catching any of the reason that he was there. It was all what could he do for them, physically as well as financially. And so he was praying that God would give him the strength to reveal for his mission. So now we got, yes?
Is there any record anywhere of what Christ actually preached to the multitude?
No, not very much. Beatitudes. Yeah, Sermon on the Mount. That's you know, the interesting point on that is that we know very little of what he preached on. It was what he did was what the deal. And there's certainly an evangelistic message there. I personally think he went through the 2,300 days day by day, but I have no basis of actually being able to prove that. So, no, very little.
One thing that we seems to be evident is there are several statements that he taught in stories and parables.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was never direct, except to the Pharisees. Only direct to the Pharisees. Everybody else was. So we got Jesus praying, disciples on the sea. Okay, Leroy.
Okay. Went up to the mountain to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against
it. Now, one of them, Mark or John, says he's about 3 to 4 miles. So they've gone across the sea, and they're within sight of the shore of where they want to go.
During the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake.
Okay, let's stop there. Fourth watch. Anybody know what time that was? Pardon?
3 to 6.
A.M. or P.M.?
P.M. A.M.
About 3 o'clock in the morning. So Jesus must have had quite a prayer session. Okay?
But when the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified.
Okay, now let's stop there. Was it uncommon for them to be a lot of storms?
Yes, on Galilee.
Yeah, there were a lot of storms, so it wasn't uncommon. The insight that we have on this is very interesting. When the crowd was wanting Christ to be made king, the disciples were right there wanting the same thing, and all of a sudden Jesus tells them to get in a boat, go over the other side, and I'll meet you there. What do you think they were talking about in that boat?
How to get him to be king.
Yeah, and what else? Pardon? What else?
Yeah.
They're very unhappy.
Grumbling.
Yeah. Here's a wonderful opportunity for him to take the role of the Messiah. He hasn't done it. And they began this question among themselves, is he really the Messiah?
Yeah, there are 5,000 people, or who knows how many thousands, wanting to make him sit on David's throne.
Yep. And what a wonderful opportunity.
Yeah, yeah.
And see, they're grumbling. Now, these are seasoned fishermen. And when the storm comes, guess what? They're unprepared for it. Why? Because they just sit there grumbling. They're unprepared for it. Storm comes up. Okay.
You know, one other thing.
Yes.
The history of the world at that point, that's how, you know, large people would get enough revolt. It's sort of like today, but they had revolts, and, you know, you get enough people, and we had 15,000 people there, and we got another 10,000. So you can see with their minds it was perfectly set up.
Yeah. Well, you know, when is this guy going to do something?
Mm-hmm.
So they're unhappy, and their faith begins to doubt. Is he really who we think he is? Okay?
If there were Romans there, any Roman authorities there, and they saw that, they would have been gravely concerned.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Leroy.
They were terrified. It's a ghost, they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I, do not be afraid."
Okay. What can we learn from that sentence? What can we learn from that sentence that Jesus uttered? Here's a very interesting point. When Jesus was praying and in the mountain all by himself, we're told that he never took his eyes off the disciples. So here he is, he's praying, but his concern is still for them. And he's watching and he sees the storm. And he knows that they are not prepared for it. and here he comes. And when they cry out, being scared, thinking it was a ghost, a phenomenon, whatever, his words are, "It is I." Very comforting words to hear when you're in the midst of life's toils. He comes and says, "Be not afraid, it is I."
I am with you.
Try.
Okay. Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid. "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied.
Now what's the key word in that statement? If.
If.
If it is you. What's his faith?
Doesn't recognize him. I mean, you know.
It really is a ghost.
Yeah. I mean, that says something very powerful about the God we serve.
There's another aspect that they've never seen before. He's healed. He's fed. Now he's walking on water.
Yeah. If it is you. Continue.
Peter replied, "Tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Okay. And Peter got down out of the boat.
Okay, let's stop there. Now this tells us a lot about Peter. He's impetuous. And so he says, "If this is you, have me come out of the water, come out on the water with you. If it is you." And how does Jesus answer?
Come.
And to Peter's credit, he gets out on that boat. So now he's out on the water, waves are coming. What happens?
He got out of the boat, he walked on the water and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." And immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him.
Okay. How would we apply that to our life today?
Take your eyes off Jesus.
Call out for him.
How do we apply that to our life today? When we're in trouble, what do?
Question God. If you're there, or maybe you're not there.
Call out. And when things get straight, what's the tendency that we do?
Forget.
"Thank you, Lord. I'll handle it from here." And immediately we get right back into trouble. It's just the way life works lots of times. So here we have Peter, who's doubting. It's even Jesus, but through the graciousness of Jesus, he just says, "Come." And Peter gets out, and he's doing good. Everything is fine. And then he looks down, and he says what a lot of us say, "Oh my, look at the mess I'm in, and there's no way out." And he immediately starts to sink. Now, how does Jesus handle this? Does he preach him a nice sermon? Reached out, picked him up. Okay, next.
Jesus said to him, "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?"
Now comes the sermon. Okay.
"But when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, 'Truly, you are the Son of God.'"
Okay. So Peter reaches out and he calls out, and do you see that God immediately answered? And then came the question, why did you doubt? What do we have a tendency to do? What do we have a tendency to do when we're rescuing somebody? Pardon?
Preach
them
a sermon.
Yeah, we generally want to preach the sermon first. And then say, well, I guess this time I'll help you. But Jesus didn't do that. Now, why were the disciples amazed about this one? What do you think they learned from this experience?
Imagine they recognized a power far beyond anything they could ever even dream of.
Okay. What did they learn?
Maybe he really was the creator.
Okay. What did they learn?
They were astonished, but I'm not sure what they learned.
What did you say, Terry?
I don't think they learned anything, because they're still complaining who's going to be next, and he's going to do this.
Learned nothing. Not immediately they didn't learn anything. I think as they looked back on it, they learned a lot. But I mean, how many times did you... I mean, look what Jesus has done with these people. He's already calmed the storm once. And they said, what kind of man is this? Why, he can even calm the waves and the whole sea and take care of nature. What did they learn from that? Remember, as soon as he did this, here come the demoniacs, and what did they do?
Run.
Run. See, they...
These are one thing, but he's a crazy man. That's something else.
Yeah. Here he feeds 5,000 men, want to be made king, and they're sitting there grumbling about the timing, what's wrong with him. Here comes the storms of life. He comes out and walks on the water. Peter goes through his. They say, well, you are the Messiah. I've learned my lesson. And if we continue to go through this, we'll see it did nothing for them. Yes?
It was exactly the same thing with the children of Israel, what they saw.
Absolutely.
Sea parted, saved there, pillar of light, cloud, water from a rock.
And every step of the way, they said the same thing. We'd have been better off if we'd have stayed in Egypt and been slaves. And here comes the manna. And then they get thirsty. Well, we'd been better off. Do you see how good God is? You know, it's one thing for the children of Israel to say, well, God's out there. But with these disciples, He's right there with them. And so here he is, he's in a mountain, he's praying, asking for strength that he can reveal God through himself, that people would see why he's here. He's watching his disciples. We must understand we can never, never, never get out of God's sight. He never takes his eyes off of us. And they were unprepared. And when the storm came, they were not ready. But here he comes. And the most comforting words that he can give us in our life, when we have the waves around us, the troubles around us, doesn't look like anything can work out correctly, is, "It is I." What better words could we hear than "It is I"? And even then, as soon as things get right back, even keel, the tendency is to absolutely forget. We see this done with our children, correct?
Just a little parenthetical here. Now, when Moses was at the bush and he asked God who it was, he says, I am and I am. Now, Jesus uses that same thing and says, I. And the I am is, as we understood, I believe in the names of God, is Elohim.
No, I am is Yahweh.
Yahweh.
Yeah.
I thought it was Elohim.
No.
Yahweh is all the rest of it.
No, Yahweh is I am that I am.
I'm still getting confused on all those names.
Were you going to say something, Jim?
Well, in my translation, it says, those in the boat fell upon their knees in profound reverence and worshiped him, saying, truly, Son of God by nature you are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I notice that reverence and worship, those are, worship is the second commandment, reverence is the third commandment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm tying this to worship and the 7-day weekly cycle, which is supposed to bring us back again once a week to acknowledge God.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think they were worshiping him?
I think they were afraid of him. I think they were probably prominently because they were relieved.
Mm-hmm. Problem solver.
Yes, yes.
See, we can fall into that trap. We can appreciate and worship God as the great problem solver.
But I see myself and our the whole experience of God's children is going through this cycle over and over again. It's very repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps those opportunities are given to us periodically so that we make the choice to become even better or better.
Mm-hmm. What Jesus was trying to do was to appeal to them, can't you see who I am? And they kept coming back looking at, we can see what you can do for us. And that was the difference. They had a preconceived idea of a kingdom on this earth. The night before he's crucified, they're sitting there wondering who's going to be number one and number two in the kingdom. And when you have a preconceived idea, then you can present everything you want to, but you're still looking through the eyes of the ultimate, which is, I'm going to set up a kingdom on this earth. And he continually tries to appeal to them, and over, and they just don't get the message. Until they reached Pentecost, and they went back to through the Old Testament, and they began to understand this was God. And then all of a sudden, the whole world changed for them. Can you imagine how they felt as they looked back in their life in the 3.5 years with Christ, and how they must have just said, oh my, I can't believe I did that.
But they were human beings.
That's exactly right.
Just like us.
Right. Story of the children of Israel is our story. Story of the disciples is our story. Because until we open up our hearts and open up our minds and let the Holy Spirit work through us, as long as we work with preconceived ideas, then everything's put into a certain folder, and that's just the way it is. And that's exactly what happened to the disciples. Christ was trying to say to them, I'm not going to be king. The wrong concept. He's praying in the mountains, but he's still watching over those who love. To me, it's a symbol of great hope for all of us in our life. And the biggest thing is, when we're in trouble, it's easy to cry out for God. And when He comes along and He gives us that peace, it's easy to forget. And that's the danger that we all get into. At least Peter, not having the best faith in the world, but at least he got out of the boat. But boy, did he have sense enough to understand one more time as soon as he was in trouble to call out to God. And there he was. Any comments or thoughts?
Well, the moral to the story is that we need to be calling out to God before we get into trouble so we can stay out of trouble.
That's yeah. Very good.
So. I can understand those people, because haven't you been in a position where you heard something all your life, you read it in the scriptures, and all of a sudden it spoke to you?
Mm-hmm.
How did I not get that before?
No, absolutely.
You know, look, try that. I've read that very thing.
Yeah.
It seemed like it didn't speak to me.
See? I mean, you know, at one time I was a very, 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 very strict legalist. Grew up a very strict legalist. And now I look back at the same text I used at one time one way, is I use the same text a different way. Because it's just, what is that concept of God? See, I mean, you read a text, and if God is authoritative and making His list and checking you and seeing what's going on, then you look at those texts and you say, well, boy, I certainly understand. So it's that picture. And that was what's wrong with the disciples. They just kept looking at, man, we're in on the ground floor. And that's all they ever saw. So they were moved, but only what can God do for me? Any other comments?
So what's the hardened? The heart was hardened. You said we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, appreciate that. Yeah, the hearts were hardened because even in this specific situation, they looked at truth and only recognized what it did for them for the immediate, and then they moved on. And so their picture of God did not change.
So when it talks about hardened heart, that just means that it didn't go beyond that moment?
Yeah. Yeah, whenever God reveals Himself, and Jesus revealed Himself there, you think they came to the right conclusion. This is the Messiah, but their whole picture of the Messiah was absolutely wrong. And so instead of softening the heart, it hardened it, because it just made them more concrete than what they wanted the Messiah to do. And so anytime God reveals Himself to us, it moves us in one direction or other. It never stays the same. It can't. And so we either see God and we're moved one way, or in Pharaoh's case, hardened his heart, he moves up. Judas, perfect example. All through the Gospels, Jesus appealed to Judas over and over and over. Hardened his heart because he rejected. So
Judas saw all these things happening all the way along, just as much as Peter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, one of my favorite deals is within minutes of when Christ was going through his trials, within minutes of each other, he saw Judas and he saw Peter. And he looked at them with the same look of love, concern, and what they were going through. Peter went to the Garden of Gethsemane and cried and wept like a baby. And Judas saw that same look of compassion and love and went out and hung himself. Same face, same love. One hung himself, the other heartbroken. God reveals himself that we have to make decisions. We move in one direction or the other. Any other comments?
When we read this and we can read it before, the thing I managed to get out of that little story is he made them get in a boat. Get away from me. I'm going to go off by myself. And they're wondering why they, he sent them away, why they're by themselves, when the whole time it's not. And I'd like to think later on, they're thinking, he's here all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He was up on a mountain, all of a sudden he's here. We didn't call for him, he just showed up.
Right. Absolutely. You know, Isaiah says God's eyes go to and fro, just looking for those that he can take care of, and he never takes his eyes off of us. That's a comforting thought.
There's a disquieting thought in this whole thing too. There were probably more than 10,000 adults plus children there. Some of those people had to see the spiritual meaning of Christ.
You would think.
There had to be something. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, apply that today. We'd really be saying.
Mm-hmm. And right after this experience, Jesus says to the disciples, remember, he's just fed the 5,000, has this experience. Then he says to the disciples, I am the bread of life. So he's trying to drive that point home. You saw me feed with 5 loaves, but I am the bread of life. And that comes immediately after this experience. Father in heaven, you're constantly with us. You're always looking at us. May we always look to you, hold your hand, walk on the water of life, and never go down into the waves of sorrow. Be with us continually. May we understand that you always are with us. For this we're grateful. In Jesus' name, amen.